Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. I am in the middle of the resolutions. I'm going to take a quick pause here because I need to vent a little bit. I've worked with a lot of different organizations, and anybody that has listened to this show understands my position on Christianity and understands my position on spirituality, morality, and all of these types of things. And so anybody that has, you know, worked with as many different organizations or tried to work with as many organizations that I have, you will start to understand that there are people that have their heels dug in on a myopic issue. There are those who, and because I've not gone down this path on this particular myopic issue, but there are way too many people that are bent on trying to do this, you know, saving the country by having a third awakening. In other words, making this all about a third awakening and saving the morality of the world. Now, I truly believe that, and I've told you, I've got an article that actually proves, it's a multi-part article, and it's one of those that's just that hasn't really bubbled up in the priority. Maybe I should, because that way people can kind of understand and get it. I tell people all the time that there is no doubt in my mind, and everybody agrees with me, that the Lord knew how godless this nation would become. And how embracing people are of immorality and godlessness. The one thing that will turn the majority, because I'll put it like this. There are more people that find hardcore Christians that are Christians themselves that find hardcore Christians who are seeking a theological establishment, you know, they look at them as a threat. If you kind of look at what does it take to succeed in restoring our republic and restoring the morality of this nation, you have to put restoring the republic first before we can get involved in saving mankind. The Constitution is far, and I've said this so many times, the Constitution is, as far as I am concerned, Scripture, but it is not Scripture for the salvation of mankind. It is Scripture for the governance of mankind. And the Lord, there's no doubt in my mind, the framers all asserted that the Lord established this nation. And so he did that. And you've heard me even say this, that how arrogant are we as Americans that we think that liberty should only be enjoyed on the, you know, within our boundaries of the world. In other words, Alaska, Hawaii, and the contiguous 48 states. You've heard me say many times that we need to apply the Constitution or allow states, and Trump should be using the Constitution to invite Hong Kong, to invite, you know, Taiwan and these, Crimea, and some of these other states that are being oppressed by evil oppressors. You know, it would change the relationship just like that. If you understand that all of a sudden, when people realize that they could actually apply and become first a territory for a long period of time as they transition and meet the criteria to become a state, that takes a while, but it creates a permanency in the change of the government structure of that state. And in other words, it basically rips these nations, these like Hong Kong, that's not necessarily a nation. Taiwan is, but it rips Taiwan or not Hong Kong, it rips Hong Kong out of the grasp of China. And it sends the message to China that you can't go around and force yourself and, you know, in conquests anymore. That even though America may have had conquests, we didn't necessarily fight other than for our contiguous states. Because you got to remember, if you looked at the drawings of the United States, Georgia, the Carolinas, and Virginia, and so forth, they actually traveled laterally across the United States all the way to the coast. They considered that their territory. And then the Spaniards started realizing, even though they didn't want anything to do with North America because there was no gold and precious things that they could steal and dominate. It was just a bunch of plains and mountains. No artifacts, nothing that they could steal. They didn't see any tangible value to America. So when we started settling here, that's how we started, you know, establishing the territory. And then all of a sudden they go, well, shoot, there's something going on there. Maybe we need to, you know, dominate some of that land. But bottom line, there has always been this concept of stretching the United States all the way across this continent. And that was our manifest destiny. We also actually appealed to both Mexico and Canada to say, hey, why don't you join the United States? And both of them actually, stepped back and said they rejected our offer and said, no, because you embrace slavery. So it's interesting, but my point is that when you're dealing with organizations that want to actually use their, you know, use a political process of having a third awakening, I ask them, do you realize that the Constitution does not empower the federal government to have any religious position? In other words, we can't go in and say, okay, the federal government is going to start creating this third awakening or make America Christian. That has to be done by the preachers and through the freedom of religion. And the only way we can get to the point of a freedom of religion is getting government out of the way. And I believe that's why the Lord gave us a compact. That's why the Lord understood what we would need to force the federal government out of controlling every facet of our life so that we could then allow the churches and allow the preachers and the ministers to start healing America down that path so that government no longer comes in and puts their heavy heel on our throat and say, thou shalt not pray in public. Thou shalt not put your religion over our secular religion. And if you understand that, excuse me, if you understand this point I'm making, got a frog, then I think you'll understand that you can't put the cart in front of the horse. Any organization that does that is on a failed path. And I'm not wasting my time trying to save people. And I truly believe that this one organization, the Friends of Liberty United, who I'm trying to help, you know, stand up, I think they're making a tragic mistake. I think that they're, if you see some of the videos that they start doing, They're seeking and they're trying to recruit a religious rank that is, you know, their sole purpose is to restore Christianity in America instead of compliance to the Constitution. We can't, we cannot, and we will not have the success religiously until we have the success politically. because right now, politically, the federal government or the general government is violating the Constitution in their edicts and so forth. And even though these folks are saying, well, you know, we can do this by doing that, but you know, you can't restore the republic in creating a Christian federal government. What we have to do is we have to get the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. That's what I'm always saying. So anyway, this was my opening rant because I feel like I keep on running into these brick walls. And you know, there are Christians that absolutely get this, that for the Lord to heal this nation, we have to get government and their heel off of our neck. So anyway, when we come back from the break, because we're going to be heading into a break here, we're going to get into James Madison's Virginia Resolution. And this is kind of short, so we should actually be able to get through this in one segment, other than the fact that I'll be editorializing, not one segment, I mean the Today Show. What we hope to do is then go straight into the resolutions of 1799 and then go into the resolutions of, or actually Madison's notes on the Virginia resolutions of 1800. And so with that, when we come back, we will have Madison's notes, or actually Madison's comments in the Virginia resolutions of 1798. So please stay tuned. And we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so about 2 months after Thomas Jefferson's resolutions of Kentucky go out and then end up getting passed, I believe. I read it as November 10th. I'm pretty good on dates. I'm terrible on names. As a matter of fact, I know it was November 10th because that's the Marine Corps birthday. So anyway, where are we going with this? The point is that here you had Jefferson send out and then the Kentucky resolutions embraced by Virginia. Well, or not Virginia, Kentucky. So then Madison, basically, what he tries to do, and the intent with what they were both doing was to try, first off, Jefferson couldn't do, and they, what they wanted to do was spread it out, so, because they were both Virginians, but actually Jefferson was pretty well beloved in Kentucky. Anyway, what ended up happening was that as Jefferson's resolutions went out, Virginia was going to, you know, basically read those, and then Madison wrote the Virginia resolutions as a resounding, we agree. And we if in reading this, you'll understand. See, Jefferson audited the Constitution and identified how each of these acts, these friends of friends and enemies of the United States and sedition and so forth. There were four total acts that were passed and signed into law, unconstitutional law by John Adams, and so. Jefferson audited, identified the encroachments, and actually identified the process that the states needed to create committees of correspondence and start working together and so forth, and actually started pushing for this unification of the states. And we read that in Resolutions 8, 9, and 10. And so if you look at Madison's resolutions, he makes a very interesting point in the 10th resolution. And so what we want to do is we want to kind of show you how what ended up happening was Madison actually, instead of going down the path of saying, you know, we're auditing the Constitution, they didn't audit. They actually accepted everything that Jefferson said. And this is what Madison said. He says, resolved, and this is the Virginia Resolution of 1798. And this was done, I'm going to say it was late December. Actually, it was December 24th, 1798. So on Christmas Eve, the Virginia legislatures, because back in those days, they didn't celebrate Christmas. Interesting. And so this kind of goes to my very beginning rant. They really believed that religion was, and you have to understand that the Second Awakening hadn't occurred, and religion was a very personal thing. It didn't become a showboating, you know, a public thing. As a matter of fact, they had public prayer for very specific things, but they didn't have prayer events where, you know, people get up and like they have today. That was all that spawned out of the Second Awakening, which actually was a move away from Christianity and a move towards worshiping Mammon, or I should say, the evangelical preachers, the ministers, the priests, what have you. They, instead of actually doing their work for free, because at that point before, most all Christianity in America was not a professional service. It was in the Catholic Church, and it was repugnant to Christianity. Well, all of a sudden, the Second Awakening brought capitalism into Christianity, and this became the real problem. And so anyway, this is Madison's Virginia Resolutions, and he says, resolved that the General Assembly of Virginia doth unequivocally express a firm resolution to maintain and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of this state against every aggression, either foreign or domestic, and that they will support the government of the United States in all measures warranted by the former. Second resolution, that this assembly most solemnly declares a warm attachment to the union of, to the union of the states, to maintain which it pledges all its power, and that for this end it is their duty to watch over and oppose every infraction of those principles which constitute the only basis of that union, because a faithful observance of them can alone secure its existence and public happiness. So he's just basically taking Jefferson's resolutions, like I said, and just amplifying, one, their attachments, their feelings, the importance of maintaining compliance to the Constitution. In the third resolution, this is what he says, that this assembly doth explicitly and peremptorily declare that it views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact to which the states are parties to, as limited by the plain sense and intention of the instrument constituting the compact, as no further valid, that they are authorized by the grants enumerated in that compact, and that in case of deliberate, palpable, and dangerous exercises of their powers not granted by the said compact, the states who are parties thereto have the right and are duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of evil and for maintaining their respective limits and authorities, rights, and liberties appertaining to them. Okay, so here's the big word that really jumps out as the change of the thought of nullification. Clearly, Jefferson had already nullified or identified that these laws were in contradiction to the laws of the land and of the states. And so each of these laws, he said, is null and are void and of no force. So did Madison say, oh, we're nullifying these laws as well? No, what he was saying is we completely agree with your assessment and that we as a state are duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of evil. So what is interpose? To interrupt, to interpolate, interject, cut in, throw in, butt in, intervene or interfere. It is taking action. It is not just sitting here and nullifying. In other words, he's calling for something completely different than what anybody else says. Oh, well, you know, they just wanted to nullify. No, it wasn't about nullification, or he would have said, we too agree that these are void and of no force. What he said was that we need to interfere, we need to intervene in arresting this evil, arresting the progress of evil and maintaining within their respective limits the authorities, rights, and liberties appertaining to them. And he's talking about the states. His fourth resolution, that the General Assembly doth also express its deep regret that a spirit has in sundry instances. And so what is a sundry? Sundry is a variety. So I'll just rephrase that without the sundry. And it basically, that the General Assembly doth also express its deep regret that a spirit has in variety of instances been manifested by the federal government to enlarge its powers by forced construction of the constitutional charter which defines them, and that the implication have appeared of a design to expound certain general phrases which have been copied from the very limited grant of power in the former Articles of Confederation were the less liable to be misconstrued. In other words, everybody knew that the federal government had limited powers, and he says that they just basically copied those things, that there was no way they should be able to construe or create with, you know, this artistic license, this ability to assume these types of powers. And he goes on to say, this is still the fourth resolution, so as to destroy the meaning and effect of the particular enumeration which necessarily explains and limits the general phrases, and so as to consolidate the states by degrees into one sovereignty. In other words, what they're trying to do and what will inevitably happen is if they allow to self-aggrandize themselves, they will become the single sovereignty instead of a general government serving 13 sovereign states. Actually, at this point in time, I think it was 15. The obvious tendency and inevitable consequence of which would be to transform the present Republican system of the United States into an absolute or at best mixed monarchy. Now, that word right there, mixed monarchy, or that metaphor, that example, that was fighting words. That was shock. I mean, most people thought that Madison was, you know, just a really smart guy and a calm gentleman. He actually had spunk. He actually knew how to really raise people to go, wow, are you kidding me? We've got to step in. And a monarchy, everybody understood that a monarchy was a true threat to liberty because they just fought a war against a monarch. And so that was a key, you know, shock value word. We'll be right back after these two promos.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so here Madison really, like I said, he throws it out there that what's going to happen is they're going to create this mixed monarchy because they're going to consolidate all the power. And the natural tendency of government is to consolidate that power behind a person. I want you to look at America today. How many Americans today look at Trump as the guy that's going to save this nation? Nowhere in the Constitution does the president have the ability to, and as a matter of fact, I listen to commentary all the time about, well, these presidents are running on a platform that they're going to offer this. As a matter of fact, I was listening to not necessarily that they weren't a political radio show, but they were talking about one of the Democratic candidates who had an agricultural platform. And basically what they were talking about is the right to repair and the movement of the right to repair, and that that was a part of this Democratic candidate. And they go, that's a really good thing. And this shows you how idiotic these, you know, these entertainers, because that's what they are. They're entertainers. Because they don't understand the Constitution. They're not speaking in context of, you know, here's another example of a presidential candidate that has created platforms to say, we're going to do this. It's just like Obamacare, just like with the Clinton or Hillary care. Presidents have no authority to legislate or even put forth an agenda. First and foremost, the Constitution even limits the federal, even Congress, from creating any law that is outside the enumerated powers. And yet they've been doing it. And so the president comes in and says, go ahead and do it and I'll sign it into law, because we're not going to bother with the constitutional process. We're just going to assume and assert our own power. And so if you understand what Madison is saying, he's talking about consolidating that to where a monarch can actually, you know, run on an agenda and end up. And, well, you got to understand also, back in those days, they saw that the Constitution would be moved into a position where a president could actually rule for life, because they didn't have any term limits. And fortunately, America got smart with FDR, who was another king. And as a matter of fact, I labeled all the presidents from Andrew Jackson on as the beginning of the string of kings, even though, you know, Adams kind of acted like a king. And even Jefferson kind of took a kingly state, but he still tried to restrain himself. The fact of the matter is they just couldn't resist anymore, and they started centralizing more and more powers, and the president of the United States became, you know, not the enforcer of the laws. It's not that they're not the most powerful, but they have asserted themselves as a more power than they're supposed to have type of position. And Andrew Jackson was the first. So anyway, this is resolution number 5, that the General Assembly doth particularly protest against the palpable and alarming infractions of the Constitution in the two late cases of, quote, Alien and Sedition Acts, passed at the last session of Congress, the first of which exercises a power nowhere delegated to the federal government, and which by uniting legislative and judicial powers of the executive subverts the general principles of a free government, as well as the particular organization and positive provisions of the federal Constitution, and the other of which acts, it exercises in like manner a power not delegated by the Constitution, but on the contrary, expressly and positively forbidden by one of the amendments thereto, a power which more than any other ought to produce universal alarm, because it is leveled against the right of freely examining public character and measure, and of free communication among the people thereon, which has been justly deemed an only effectual guardian of every other right. Here you go. In other words, discourse, as far as Madison was concerned, was probably the most important amendment. The First Amendment was the most important. That's why it was first. That's why the Second Amendment wasn't first. And there's lots of people with the myopic view that the Second Amendment is what we have to defend. Well, actually, no, the Constitution defends all the amendments, because within the Constitution, it identifies that we, the people, are to defend this. So we have perverted ourselves to where people have, you know, finally said, hey, the Second Amendment is, you know, our last resort. Actually, not. Enforcing the Constitution is our last and only resort that will work. People that, you know, are in this, this is why those who have the myopic view of the Second Amendment being the rescuer of this republic, many people within those types of organizations believe we have to fight a revolution. And that is ill-advised. And that is, muskets aren't muskets anymore. The federal government, or I should say the general government, possesses far more technology and power to exert their power than, you know, ever before. And I mean, with the way of targeted munitions and so forth, they've proven this, that they can just literally drop a bomb on a house and basically just eliminate the people in that house, and it's done. Anyway, the sixth resolution, that this state, having by its convention, which ratified the federal constitution, expressly declared that among other essential rights, quote, the liberty of conscience and of the press cannot be canceled, abridged, restrained, or modified by any authority of the United States. So I'm going to reread this. That this state, the state of Virginia, having by its convention, which ratified the federal constitution, expressly declared that among other essential rights, the liberty, quote, the liberty of conscience and of the press cannot be canceled, abridged, restrained, or modified by any authority of the United States. So here's one case where a state has actually stated that the freedom of the press is sacred. So when I talk about whether the 14th Amendment applies, I've always had the caveat that the states actually can pass laws to regulate and ensure that the people are protected from a propaganda mill known as the press. However, if you have it in the Constitution, like Virginia had put it in their Constitution, then they can't actually, unless they amend their Constitution, create regulations of standards for objective journalism and identifying press or media outlets that are actually propaganda mills, and identifying them as more dangerous than, you know, the intended point of journalism. And so this is important to understand, that here Madison is saying that, hey, we actually created a law that did not allow the federal government or any government to come along and say, you have to suppress and restrain your press, your voice, and those types of things. Anyway, and he closes, this is still the sixth resolution, and he says, and from its extreme anxiety to guard these rights from every possible attack of sophistry or ambition, having with other states recommended amendment for that purpose, which amendment was in due time annexed to the Constitution. Now, so that amendment was annexed to the Constitution, but it was not annexed to all other states. Whatever state you live in, go scan your Constitution, get it into a text, and look for freedom of the press. Or look for just look for the word freedom. And in each case, find out, does your Constitution protect the freedom of the press? In other words, they can do whatever they want. They can lie. They can, you know, promote agendas and be non-objective so that they constantly basically inculcate and indoctrinate and brainwash people that guns are bad, guns are bad, guns are bad, guns are bad, guns are bad. And, you know, who's surprised that most people start thinking guns are bad? How'd that happen? And the press does have and can play a critical role. And this is why David Rockefeller actually thanked the press for supporting and doing just that, promoting this agenda. Oh, shoot. So When we come back after these two promos, we will finish Resolution 6 and get through 7, 8, and 9. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so let me start off with the sixth resolution again. That this state, having by its convention, which ratified the federal constitution, expressly declared that among other essential rights, the liberty of conscience and of the press cannot be canceled, abridged, restrained, or modified by any authority of the United States. Now, I want to be clear here, because Madison, in context to the conscience, because this takes me back to this concept of religion. Religion is your conscience. It is one of those parts of your conscience, whether you're godless or you have faith in some religion, some sect. And so Madison is basically blanketly declaring that regardless of what your conscience is, it cannot be the individual conscience, the individual expression, and so forth. However, we have a constitutional republic that requires all U.S. citizens to support the Constitution. If your conscience is diametrically opposing individual liberty and individual sovereignty, then you cannot and should not be, and you should be considered an enemy of the state. Well, what do you do about a religion and who has a conscience of being an enemy to the state by supporting the concept of government dictating every facet of your life, such as the Mohammedans? Well, then that is not in congruence with the Constitution. It is an antithetical to the intent of liberty and this nation and being able to ensure and protect the conscience of others. Therefore, I think Madison, you know, in some respects was a little bit, you know, too, you got to understand at that point in time, every state in the Union was still Christian. They were still supporting Christian churches. That every state in the Union banned the conscience of Mohammedans, Buddhists, Hindu, and so forth. And even Jews in most of all of these states. I think there was only two states, Maryland and I think Pennsylvania, that allowed Jews to openly practice. So, you know, what he was saying here is the freedom of conscience, if you're Christian, at that point in time. But I think as time grew on and he realized that, you know, the federal government has no business, they can't place any type of laws, whether it come from the Supreme Court, the president, and more importantly, from Congress, they cannot make any laws. That's why there's really no laws of Congress. It's been the Supreme Court ruling it because Congress knows they can't make any law regarding the expression of religion. So what makes it okay for the bench or the president to be able to do that? It's not okay. Anyway, moving on. And from its extreme anxiety to guard these rights from every possible attack of sophistry or ambition, having with other states recommended amendment for that purpose, which amendment was in due time annexed to the Constitution, it would mark a reproachable inconsistency and criminal degeneracy if an indifference was now shown to the most palpable violation of one of the rights thus declared and secured, and the establishment of a precedent which may be fatal to the other. And that's what I'm basically saying, is that when you start establishing this hard, fixed, cemented idea that everybody and every religion has a right and a place in America, no, there are religions, or there is a religion that is antithetical and an enemy and actually fatal to allowing it to linger in America. 7, that the good people of this Commonwealth, having ever felt and continuing to feel the most sincere affection for their brethren of the other states, the truest anxiety for establishing and perpetuating the union of all, and the most scrupulous, in other words, honorable, fidelity to that Constitution, which is the pledge of mutual friendship and the instrument of mutual happiness. The General Assembly doth solemnly appeal to the like dispositions of other states in confidence that they will concur with this Commonwealth in declaring. So you see, he's already trying to create this unification. He's saying that they appeal to the like dispositions of the other states in confidence. He has this confidence that they will concur with this Commonwealth in declaring, as it does hereby declare, that the acts aforesaid are unconstitutional, and that the necessary and proper measures, I want you to understand this, he's not just saying nullifying, that the necessary and proper measures will be taken by each for cooperating with this state in maintaining the authorities, rights, and liberties referred to the states respectively or to the people. That the governor be desired to transmit a copy of the foregoing resolutions to the effective authority of each of the other states, with a request that the same may be communicated to the legislature thereof, and that a copy be furnished to each of the senators and representatives representing the state in the Congress of the United States, agreed to by the Senate December 24th, 1798. And so, what has just happened is that Madison had responded and basically said that we need to appeal and interpose collectively. He didn't say that, you know, everybody's for themselves. He basically said that everybody cooperate with each other. That is not independent thought. Why am I going into these details like this? Because when you have organizations like the John Birch Society, the 10th Amendment Center, that say, hey, this is a state-by-state issue, but it sure seems like Jefferson and Madison disagree, because they're clearly stating that we have to unify and work together and cooperate in getting the federal government into compliance. Who's right? You read these documents. You read my article regarding nullification versus interposition. It's right there on my constitutional articles on reclaimingtherepublic.org. And the only conclusion you will find is that we absolutely have to. And what really proves this? I want you to understand that both Virginia and Kentucky were successful in nullifying these laws. So, in other words, Thomas Jefferson, if this was only about nullification, which it isn't, which the evidence in these documents prove otherwise, if this was only about nullification, then why do I have to read the resolutions of 1799 written by Thomas Jefferson and then Madison's notes on the Virginia resolutions? And I'm going to tell you that both of them expressed lamentation. They lamented. They were not happy. They were very disappointed that no other state stood up to do what they were supposed to do. So hold it. Why would they be frustrated and upset if they already succeeded? That flies in the face of logic. Well, they should have done a victory lap. No. That wasn't their intent, and that's what proves this. What proves this is the fact that Jefferson went back and basically said, I can't believe you guys aren't doing this, and I'm lamenting this fact. But he also has to draw the line and say, we're not going to part, and sever our relationship. See, at this point in time here, he clearly expresses that a state actually can secede. He says he's still their fond attachment. We're going to get into exactly what the wording is. I'm paraphrasing. But Kentucky's fond attachment to the union of these states was more important than saving, the freedom of speech, the freedom of conscience, expression, so forth. And, what these other laws violated in the Constitution. So, If you get your arms around that and you start understanding what the heck that they're really talking about, then you can't conclude anything otherwise. I mean, my friends, I have to tell you that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and RepublicReview.org. You didn't think I'd get that in, did you? Anyway, so when we come back, or in our next episode, actually, we are going to cover Jefferson's lamentations regarding the 1799 resolution. And so most people think, why? But it proves my point. It proves that the fact that Thomas Jefferson was very upset and frustrated. What did he end up doing? He and Madison, they were so frustrated, they created a political revolution, created the Republican Party, and overcame the Federalist in the upcoming in 2 years. That's the power that these two men had in 2 years. Today, we do not have that power. I am not Thomas Jefferson. Nobody knows me, and nobody follows me to that point. So this is why I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.